Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
There are cases that leave you wondering if anyone's really in control. Law enforcement, the courts, or just chaos. The death of 15-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez feels kind of like one of those cases. A teenage girl gone missing multiple times, found months later, not in a field, not in a lake, but in the front trunk of a Tesla linked to the musician known as David. What followed wasn't clarity. It was more confusion. A search warrant to the Hollywood Hills home tied to him. A landlord claiming critical evidence was left behind. A private investigator stepping in saying he found sadistic plans detailing what was to be done with Celeste. Yeah, there's a lot of questions going on in this case. Former FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer joining us to help us break this all down over the weekend. I know you were breaking it down over on your channel, Break the Case. I watched some of that. Then I made a McDonald's Happy Meal themed piece with Sora that involved D4VD, which was, it was horrible. But it's a horrible case, but there's so many new things that we're learning in this case that I think are making a lot of us question what is going on in this investigation. What were some of the things you have gleaned off of the private investigator now speaking out loud and talking about what he's finding?
Well, Tony, it's becoming literally, as you said, as clear as mud at this point, because there's so much that we have facts. Then we have innuendo, and then we have new statements from the PI. So if I could, and I actually jotted a few of these down just to give everybody a refresher of our facts.
Yeah.
The facts are April of 2024, she was reported missing. September 2024, she was reported as being back home because she's on video. So it wasn't reported by her family. Nobody told law enforcement, but we know she back home because we've all seen the video.
Yeah.
According to records, law enforcement records regarding the missing case in that jurisdiction, there were three actual missing episodes reported. Okay. So that catches us up on the missing piece. Mm-hmm. There was a parking violation of D4VD's Tesla on August 27th, 2025. There was another parking violation on 9/3/2025. On September 5th, 2025, his vehicle was towed. And on September 8th, just one day after her 15th birthday, so she only lived 14 years, her body was found in the front trunk. Right after the very first reporting, and this was from KTLA-TV, and I always look at the local reporting. They are always on it before it ever becomes a national story. Nobody even knows whether it's going to become a national story. It started out with a body in this trunk. And then all of a sudden it was a body in D4VD's trunk. And then all of a sudden it was Celeste, right? This was stepping stones. Mm-hmm. But this was from the very first report. And they reported a dismembered body in the front trunk of the Tesla. This was when they were trying to help in LA get information related to who this could be in this truck. So they gave a big description, 5'1", wavy black hair, tube top, black leggings, yellow bracelet, stud earrings, 71 pounds, and a finger on her right index finger, SHHH dot, dot, dot. So that was the description given to the public when this first broke. At that point, of course, an affirmative by that shush, she was identified by her mother as Celeste Rivas Hernandez. So I think it's important to get down those dates, those, you know, that information, because that's facts that's irrefutable in terms of what was reported and particular dates of citations and towings and things.
I want to talk about right at the beginning here with the KTLA reporting and the dismembered body. I'm not trying to be gross or to get gory on this, but it is a key part of this story. That seems to be the only place we've seen the reporting of dismemberment. We've hearing decomposed. That's been that part is in the official report, but the dismembered part, is that anywhere in any official reporting, or is that from the KTLA reporting? But I don't see the connection of where KTLA got that from any sort of official source other than maybe some sort of inside source that they have.
What they wrote, and I'm just going to quote this.
Yeah,
they said head and torso. By the way, in that
very specific,
specific. They didn't say limbs. They didn't say finger. We know there had to be a finger. So there's actually a lot of question as to whether the fingers were in the frunk or somewhere else. But according to this initial reporting, which again is what I always start with, they wrote head and torso, quote, according to LAPD.
And then, but you also just described a lot of detail about the body and the weight and all of this. That's what makes me, it's like, okay, if this is dismembered, is that like weight as in whole of what they found? And the fact that she was wearing a tube top and that sort of stuff as well also strikes me as odd. If the body is dismembered, they keep the clothes on the person. I would almost, I don't know, I've never dismembered a body.
Oh, yeah,
Is that common, Jen, that they're still wearing their clothes when they're dismembered? I don't know the answer to that.
I do. And yes, you know, they don't go through the trouble necessarily of making the body nude. Remember, for the most part, the reason people dismember is to hide or conceal a dead body or to conceal what happened. In other words, some people dismember and throw a leg over here and a body part over here so that it's harder to put together what happened, who did it, where the crime really happened. But it's clear to me that her limbs had to have been in there because, as you said, there's a clothing description and we have the shh tattoo.
So intact to a certain extent. We don't know exact, but the word dismembered is in there, which could mean a part. I mean, that could, I don't know. We just don't know the extent to which, so it's hard to just speculate. With that being said, so we know that. We also have learned new things with this private investigator and the claims that he is making. We've established now what we know officially from the LAPD, but what about these new claims that have come out over the weekend with the private investigator? What have we been learning there?
And can I interject something really quick?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine, hon. My biggest question is, who authorizes a PI to go into a crime scene?
Owner of the house hired the PI.
Okay, that's the part I was missing because I was trying to figure out why this person was allowed in and allowed to do as much as they could do, as much as they got out of the story. Who allowed this? And what does the LAPD think about that?
Well, it's a great question, Stacey. For just by way of background, he was hired, as Tony said, by the owner of the mansion. Now, the owner of the mansion says that he rented this to the manager of D4BD and that, according to the PI, he didn't even have any idea that D4BD was staying there or who was staying there for that matter. And that happens often. right? You lease the house to somebody. You don't know exactly who's going in and out. You don't monitor that information. And that was made very clear. But to go over the PI's information, and I'm going to go over, it's very, very specific. So as an example, the PI says that on 7/29, that is when the vehicle was abandoned, the Tesla where the body was, and that nobody entered it that he knows of. In other words, the body would have been in there. There was no sign that the body was put in there after. I think that is a critical point, that 7/29 now we have sort of a starting point of when it was parked. He says he knows who parked it because the person who parked it wore very distinctive clothing. And he knows that they were in the mansion because he has photos of the same person wearing these distinctive clothing in the mansion 12 hours prior. He never says on Ashley Bamfield or with Jesse Weber who the person is, even though he says he knows who it is. He never says that, and he says he doesn't want to get in trouble with LAPD. But then a close associate of his on social media makes a comment that it could be, or that they believe it's this person named Neo, who is a close associate, a former close associate of D4VD. They actually specifically said that this is based on information from the PI in conjunction with the fact that this person erased their social media, in conjunction with the fact that D4VD and Neo are no longer closely connected, it would seem, for sure, on social media and publicly, obviously, since D4VD hasn't been in the public. And so when you put all of that together, social media is speculating this. And that's where we get into Tony. Yeah. It's a big leap, but I think maybe that gap can be filled in by the fact, if it is a fact, that that PI told his associate about this. It's a big secret to keep.
The PI is saying that the person that was driving the car, this is according to the PI, was, how do you, because there's an artist named Neo. I'm sure it's not that person, but is Neo, how do you spell this?
Neo.
Neo, okay.
That's different than the other Neo.
Okay.
And I'm sure the other Neo is not enjoying this story at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, just to be clear, PI doesn't say this is Neo. Associates of the PI are saying it's Neo, and that they put this all together based on statements by the PI in conjunction with social media activity. And there you go. That's
the So that's the nexus of this. And this is where the game of telephone continues of associates of. So I mean, obviously all this unconfirmed and not in no way saying that this person did anything. I mean, we don't even know if this person knew what was in the trunk for that matter. That would be, you know, that's still up for speculation. What do we know about what was found in this house that D4DV or that David was renting, that the private investigator is now working for the owner of that home, who said, I want to hire somebody to look into this further?
Well, and it made some sense to me that an owner of a mansion in this situation would want to have somebody look into things. Look, they want to make sure that they are not going to have any culpability, civilly or otherwise, and they weren't getting any answers. The other thing that was interesting, at least according to the PI, I am prefacing all of this because we're playing telephone now.
Yes.
These are words that specifically he said on national television. Mm-hmm. He said that things were left behind by LAPD, and that they did not collect, that he felt, meaning the PI felt, were evidentiary, that were left behind by the LAPD. He describes electronics, like a DVD or some other electronic.
Yeah, a DVR, I believe, was listed.
Sorry, DVR.
Yep.
And then also, he describes information that he came to know, as you had in your lead up to this conversation, specifically scary statistic, I'm quoting the PI, mind-blowing and twisted. So basically, this would have been information, obviously, that was left behind that then he found the PI. And he says within, you know, short order, he, the landlord, whoever, they turn this all over to LAPD. Two huge points on this.
Yeah. Why?
It's ruined. It's ruined now.
Yeah. Very much so. Chain of custody.
It's gone. But,
not only the tree, but it's just also they could say, well, they searched there and it wasn't there. And then somebody planted it there. And it's completely bastardized that evidence. And second of all, now to me, it's called, not that it shouldn't be, but really public scrutiny and scrutiny overall on the LAPD's job on this.
Yes.
But now the prosecutor is going to be hesitant, and they know they're going to have to face this in a court of law. God forbid they get somebody as good as Alan Jackson to make hay of all this. I mean, this is something you actually should make hay of.
Yes.
And if you get somebody, a good defense attorney, they are going to blow this up. So it's very interesting because my question is, and then we should get, I know, back to your question and or answer to your question, but what is the motivation of this PI to come forward? I totally understand the motivation to get involved in this case. He wants to make some big bucks from the mansion owner. He wants to get involved, but that's the whole purpose for a name to be P for private investigator.
Sure.
You're supposed to keep everything private and try to be solving the case instead of blast it all over the media as to your findings. I find that very problematic because of the harm it's causing the investigation.
Or is he blasting this because he sees massive screw-ups already? And it's like, well, if you all are going to not do this to the up-and-up abilities of where you should be, I guess we're going to have to expose you. Because if it doesn't get exposed early on, then it can be lied about later. And it can be, well, we did find that for... Like, there's a lot of... I mean, I kind of get the... I mean, yes, private should be private, but when people aren't doing their jobs, and I'm wondering if this is a... He's outraged that these obvious large pieces were ignored or not found and is, you know, taking them to task and basically holding truth to power on something like this.
Perhaps, you know, I don't know necessarily his motivation.
Sure.
But I can say this, Tony, to me, that again, is this the right time for that?
Is it? Yeah, I mean, it's exactly. I mean, is that going to help the investigation? No. Is it part of holding it accountable? Yes. But is that the right time to do it? I don't know the answer to that. How on earth do you think it is that the LAPD went into this house? We heard reports a couple weeks ago when they were in there that they were like scouring drains. So I'm thinking, okay, they're doing a thorough search of this. And we just kind of got to wait and see what happens because investigations do take time and they're going to be quiet while they're making their investigation. But then you hear a report like this. And again, this is just from the PI that's making these claims that there's these disturbing, and I'm paraphrasing, letters or notes that were found that talk about the Celeste problem or something of that nature. And even more dark things, it sounds like, is what he's been alluding to. In writing. How do you miss this?
Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. And when you look at it, first of all, that search warrant was served on September 18th, just to get our dates lined up with when her body was found. And then pretty shortly thereafter, this search warrant happens. And yes, according to reports, again, from a lot of the local media, there were drains searched and, you know, which makes sense because they're looking for blood, hair, anything that could be trapped in that drain. So it looks like it's thorough. But the bottom line is when you do these investigations, you really want an evidence response team that's fully trained on how to collect evidence. They start from sealing, literally making sure nothing is loose up in that ceiling, going all the way down to the floor, making sure no floorboards, no stains when you lift the carpet, that there's nothing stained there, that there's no evidence in all four corners of just a quadrant that each room should be divided up into. And this makes it clear to me that either they didn't divide it up or the people they had conducting the search really weren't clear on what to search for. Let's be clear that in these search warrants, while they outline what you can search for, basically, if they put a piece of paper, you can look for in places small enough to contain a piece of paper. So there's no excuse that says, oh, it wasn't on the list. No, no, no. That's not how it works. That gives you the legal authority to look in places where this could be found. And this clearly, if it was there then, would have been evidentiary by his description, by his description.
Yeah, I mean, these just seem like such, I mean, I'd be curious as to where he found these pieces of evidence that he's talking about. Like, where were these notes? Why was that? And that also strikes me as a little bit odd, too, quite honestly, of anybody of that age writing anything down.
Right.
And putting it on a piece of paper. Granted, we did talk about some digital, maybe it was more digital, because he did talk about it getting the DVR out of there, or some hard drives, things of that nature. Maybe this was captured digitally. Maybe I'm just, you know, running to a conclusion there too fast. But to find this information, and then it's handed over to the LAPD. Great. It doesn't sound like, from the interviews that I watched with Ashley or with Jesse, was that he's trying to work against the LAPD in any way, shape, or form. He seems to be finding stuff and turning it over. But again, you have a private investigator doing that versus the actual LAPD, who is investigating this case as the lead right now. What does that do to the evidence? I mean, what does that do to the investigation when things like this are brought in that sort of a way?
Well, 2 points here. First of all, if this would have been what I consider a properly trained private investigator, and I always encourage people, if you need a PI, please get somebody that has a law enforcement background, particularly in the area of the case that you're looking at, whether that's a homicide, whether it's a theft, whether it's, you know, a white collar case. Get a law enforcement person that has 20 years of experience making mistakes, you know, working these kinds of cases, knowing the inroads, also having great relationships, typically with people on the force that are currently on the force, because they've worked with them for years, right? And this is the critical error. When you go into there, I wonder if he was even gloved. I'm sure he wasn't. But then you say, whoa, there's this DVR or DVD, whatever it was that was there. There's paperwork. Okay, first call. I'm at D4VD's house. I'm securing everything. Nobody else is going back in. I need you to get over here and take a look. I think you all might have missed something. That is the proper protocol, not gathering it all up and, you know, running it down to the PD. I'm just flabbergasted as to how it was answered. And again, my point here is to not go after the PI. The point is to be clear what these mistakes mean to the investigation.
And John, to that point, and I'm not going to ask you to speak for police organizations across the nation, but how do they view a private investigator being called in? How do they view them on a professional level? What's your take on that?
Well, I can tell you, for the most part, they can't stand it. And you might say, well, the reason they don't like it, and again, I'm just speaking from my personal experience in law enforcement for 20 years. The reason isn't because you're worried about people, you know, second guessing your work or finding your mistakes. That has nothing to do with it. What you're really worried about is tainting witnesses, getting statements that then contradict a statement that they previously gave evidence, you know, as in this is a perfect example of evidence. When was that evidence in there? Was it put in there after the search warrant? Was it put in there, you know, before the search warrant? Where exactly was it found? Now it's up to a PI to tell us where it was found. So typically, no, because they're worried about the investigation being hindered. And that's why there's laws against it too.
But this wasn't an active crime scene. He didn't break any laws going in there to do this.
100%. He had the legal authority to be there. Yeah. 100%, Tony. But I'm saying at the point that he realizes there might be evidence there, that's when he needs to shut it down and call LAPD.
Well, that's what I'm wondering about. I mean, I'm assuming the guy probably went in there thinking, you know, The evidence, the LAPD has already been in here. So they've already taken everything that they're going to think is evidence. And if he's finding more stuff that they didn't take, then he's probably going, they did not do a thorough investigation into this. So, I mean, more information is good, but it also makes me wonder, I'm assuming, you know, if they investigated the house, they probably took pictures. I mean, I'm talking about the LAPD. So I'm curious if on the timeline of this, if some of this information, maybe some of these letters, maybe, I don't know, could they have come after the fact, after the LAPD went in there investigated? I don't believe that that makes a whole lot of sense with the timeline. I think the owner could probably clear that up in terms of the comings and goings of the house with the security system and such. But I guess that does open up the question of, was somebody from his crew in there and they, for whatever reason, left these notes behind? I don't know. I mean, it begs another question and another, you know, bump in this timeline that we don't really have the true answer to.
Well, and Tony, what I would be arguing if I were the defense, I would say, those notes, that's a song. It's a song. Ooh, he was back.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's no way this has to do with Celeste. You know, obviously he was writing other songs about Celeste. Mm. This is just a follow-up song about how we're going to dispose of Celeste in a sadistic, mind-blowing manner.
When you're having people try to cover up something horrible, and I'm trying to look at it from the aspect of, did she die by some sort of accident, by her own hand, by something, and now this group of people who are not good at problem solving are going to have to try and figure out a way to get rid of this body? I mean, disposing of a body in general is a pretty dark, sadistic type thing to have to do if you're doing it and you're not a funeral homeowner.
Right.
It's not like normally a thing anyone is doing on their own. But then to have to contemplate all the ideas and all the ways to get rid of a body, I'd be curious to know what he's talking about in the dark, sadistic sort of realm that he's referring to. Is it dark and sadistic because of the act of what's going on here? Or is it more dark and sadistic because it's pretty gross what you have to do to get rid of a body?
Well, Tony, to your point, just say, and another point that the PI made that I think is very relevant. He said he has all these pictures. I can't remember the number, but it was a lot of pictures of her. And in those pictures, they stopped on January 2nd in the morning. I believe he said that's the last known picture, at least from his vantage, that there is of Celeste. Again, what are we looking at? New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve is a time of partying. It's a time of rebirth. It's a time of people changing things. It's a exclamation point time in a lot of people's lives. It's a time of suicide, all those things. It's a peak run time for law enforcement, right?
Yeah.
And so now you're at the morning of the 2nd, which I just found very interesting. If it's true, that's the last proof of life for her. And then you put that in conjunction with these sadistic writings. Look, if she was at a party and OD'd, I would just say it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that everybody would just panic and say, all right, we need to get rid of the body. I mean, typically you would have people call if it was more of a private situation, which D4VD was very private. He says his whole life was social media. You know, he didn't interact a lot other than at concerts and with his entourage. So if it happened in a small group, still, what makes you just panic and say, listen, we're not just going to call this in. It's obviously via toxology that she, it's going to be obvious, right, how she died. So that's why I think it's something much more nefarious here.
We're talking about the David case and Celeste Rivas, her body, of course, being found in the frunk of a Tesla that was connected to singer David Jennifer Coffendaff, a retired FBI special agent with us, breaking all of this down. We were talking about how this appears to have been handled. And we're going back to January 2nd being the date, the last date that there appears to be any evidence of life for Celeste Rivas that's out there. Prior to that, there's security camera footage. There's the the door cam. There's all sorts of places where it appears she's showing up here and there, even though missing was her status for quite some time. You were talking about New Year's being a big day for this sort of thing to be happening. I can think of some other cases. Anna Walsh, there was that murder there that was on January 1st. January 1st being a day that this sort of thing, I guess we see more of it. Is that accurate for New Year's?
Yeah, absolutely. You see more things happen. First of all, unfortunately, you see a spike in people taking their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You see a spike because of the partying and everything involved, gunshots and celebrating that gets out of hand. And so you see a spike there. You see some people who are trying to turn over a whole new leaf. And that means they're starting a different sort of life or taking care of business, whether that means a divorce or whether that means walking away from a relationship or whether that means, unfortunately, in some cases, murder. So all of that, it's just this time of year that is definitely on law enforcement radar always.
And if we're talking about a cover-up, and this is where I'm starting to wonder about here, is if, because I don't know, it's hard to believe, that this would have been intentional. He has a thriving career he's up and coming. Things are going good. I don't think anybody would necessarily go, hey, let's go kill this girl. This seems like a great idea right now for everybody and we'll get away with it. That's why my gut on this is just keeps telling me like something happened, like accident of some sort took place. Whatever that accident was, or whether it's self-inflicted or not, I don't know. But I'm kind of on that mindset. And if you're young and dumb, and I don't know who would have been around her at that point in time on January 2nd or right around there, whether it was David or his entourage, his friends, whoever it may be. They're not making the best of choices, and she's 15. They already know they have basically a 15-year-old runaway. They are all of age, so they're basically harboring this runaway for all this time who is a minor. And of course, there's all the questions about, was there something sexual going on too? And that's all, I think, very much up in the air. I don't think we know the answer to that, other than people were assuming that she was older and that they were in a relationship. Still not a lot of evidence to show that they actually were. Is it something maybe where it's a panic and a cover-up because they needed a cover-up? They were harboring this 15-year-old runaway, and they're thinking, well, that will be worse than the body. And it just keeps covering up bad behavior after bad behavior with young, dumb people.
It feels pretty plausible. You know, we're living on the generation that I like to run around claiming, you know, being Gen X. We know how to fix things. We know how to take care of our situations because we always had to. I don't know that this generation can do that. And I'm not putting a blanket statement.
Not all of them, but certainly some are not the wisest.
You know, yeah. I mean, they can hit a button on their phone and get food delivered. We couldn't do that. We had to get on our bikes or get, you know, walk to McDonald's to get the food. So maybe they panicked. Maybe something did happen and they had no idea what the hell to do.
Well, we have some new clues now. At least,
what do we have?
If we believe the PI, the PI and his rendition of what he found,
okay, right?
Sadistic, they had plans for her, what they were going to do to her. Now, he makes
alive or dead, though? That's the question.
Well, that is a question. How I interpreted it was alive, how they were.
Okay.
That's how I interpreted what he said, but everybody's free to their own interpretation. What he talks about, it's, you know, being mind blowing and just unimaginable, essentially, what their plans were for Celeste. And I think that's a pretty good near quote of what he says. But he also makes it clear that he knows they didn't do those plans, right? And he probably knows that because whatever those plans meant, Celeste would have ended up someplace else, or Celeste would have ended up with a gunshot wound or whatever it was in the plan that he's not seeing now in the proof that she's dead in the frunk. So I get that it doesn't line up. And he made the point, you know, law enforcement can't arrest somebody for what they plan to do when it's clear they didn't do that. But it also, to me, sheds light on a darkness that I don't think we necessarily knew. The other thing is, Tony, and you and I have talked about this, in a court of law, I agree with you that some of this lyric, you know, the blood, these videos, him dragging a body and throwing it in the trunk, hello, that can't be used possibly in a court of law. It's going to be up to a judge. It's probably too prejudicial. But you know what? That doesn't mean that he was not imitating in his art life, what he wanted in his life, especially now that we have a dead Celeste.
This could be the ultimate art project. You know, a lot of people who are really artistic, they take things into the real world. I know a lot of artists who do. So could this be
I think that's a stretch.
Well, who knows?
What the homicide song, the what, romantic homicide?
Romantic homicide. And
what was the, I want to know the release, 2022.
But what if what if he didn't see her as a real person, if she was his muse?
Well, 2022, he would have known her, at least over internet, would have been.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was curious about the release date of it. Like, was this, because I didn't know if it was created in this last year, because January 2nd is almost a year ago now. If it would have been something within that timeline. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it could be a post thing, but it would have been even worse if it would have been like, oh, it came out in July of this year. Oh, it did not. Yeah.
Tony, I want to give you just a little snippet of that lyric. Yeah. In the back of my mind, I killed you and I didn't even regret it. I can't believe I said, but it's true. I hate you. It's just dark.
It is dark. A lot of music is dark, though. A lot of artists are dark. The coincidence, if it is a coincidence, of what the, and not that he's being accused of anything right now, but the fact that his proximity to something this dark and his lyrics match up to very dark concepts certainly does not look good. It does not play well for him. I know, or his crew or his entourage. But again, there's so many people involved in something like this and in a crew like this. It's not usually just the artist that's there by themselves. And that's why I'm it's going to be so key to understand. It looks like the PI is already starting to get into that, of who had possession of the car. You know, did they know what was in the car? What were they doing? What was their relationship? But we're also learning from what you were saying earlier, a lot of social media disappearing and some just kind of behind the scenes things and actions that seem to have taken place that don't necessarily point to a crime per se, but they point to someone not wanting to necessarily be looked at either. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. You know, I wrote a list actually of, to me, the key points that he's done after this that just don't look good.
Yeah.
First of all, he cancels all of his tour dates.
Yeah.
This is a lot of money. This is a lot of you know, time, preparation to get these dates overseas and everything. That is a huge clue to me. Number two, he erases multiple social media posts. That's very concerning. Anything that looked concerning, it's gone. He moves from the house where he was residing and paying $20,000 a month. He breaks that lease. Another very costly decision. Mm-hmm. His complete silence. And I say this because of this. It's not going to hurt him in terms of being looked at as committing a crime if he just simply comes out with a written statement. It can even be from his lawyer that says something to the effect of, you know, Celeste was such a dear friend of mine. I am so, you know, broken up with the loss of her life. Something as simple as that, but it's been complete silence. Then he wasn't at the funeral, which I think we all kind of expected. He retained counsel, which he should have. Everybody should. But I can tell you, so many people that are innocent and know they're innocent and can explain their whereabouts, they don't get counsel because they know they're innocent. And they don't want to waste the money. Secondarily, that just happened, he transfers his property to Mama, at least two places in Texas. I just think all of that doesn't bode well for how he's appearing
No, I mean, it does not bode well for how he's appearing at all. But at the same point, also, I would argue, and I've made some videos about this too, where it is also the movements of someone who is trying to protect themselves if they're being accused of something, even if they didn't do it. You would do these things. You would move property. You because you don't know what is ahead, what possible charges could come at you. Even if you have nothing to do with this, the shitstorm is on the way, batten down the hatches, whether you invited it in or not. And some of that does seem to make some sort of sense. I do wonder about the tour and all of that. I know the dates were canceled, but obviously it's another thing where the system is involved. There's a lot of people involved in that decision. It's not necessarily just David alone that would be making that call. I would be wondering if there's promoters, you know, the promoter got involved, whoever got involved and said, we're not going to put any more money into this because all this is going on over here. I'd be curious how much of a hand David had in making those choices of canceling the tour, of delaying the album, of doing those sort of things, things that involved the company, that literally the corporation of whatever David is labeled as, and those decisions being made and who was making them and for what reasons. I think that plays a big part in something like this too.
I agree. And I'm glad you're doing devil's advocate because you make a lot of good points. I still say, if I'm David and I have millions upon millions upon millions that are going to be possibly earned, I mean, look at the magnification of his social media songs. Everybody wants to hear them. People that would have never listened to them are. I mean, he's got millions of hits every month that he wouldn't have had, but for all of this blowing up. Can you imagine the concert goers?
Yeah, I mean, he would sell out right now, honestly. I mean, R. Kelly was selling out until he was put behind bars, you know, and literally, and everybody knew what the hell what was going on there. I would think it'd be more of a personal type decision. If you had nothing to do with this and you know you're going to be vindicated, keep going and keep making your money. Why stop if you had nothing to do with it? Why do you want this to hold you down? But then make a statement about it. You know, make something where, you know, you're hurting just as much if you have nothing to do with this. That, I think, would be very powerful. I mean, there's a lot of ways this could be played, depending on what exactly happened. And I'm not saying played in a way of manipulating the system, but if this was an accident, if this was an overdose, if this was a this or a that, I mean, it could be used for awareness. I mean, it could be used for, hey, this is really sad and horrible. My friend died this way. But unfortunately, so many bad decisions seem to have been made right after she died, however that may have been, that there's no way around that anymore. And it's, again, it's just covering for bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. And here we sit.
Well, and don't forget that lyric, you know, at least in his playing it out, he murdered and he didn't regret it. So that to me plays into the psyche, because now we don't have any sign of remorse, not even a sentence that's out to the public.
We don't publicly, but legally, any attorney is going to tell him to shut the F up. And he seems to be listening to whoever attorney he has that would likely be saying that. I mean, as much as we on the outside would want to hear more, as much as his family would probably want to hear more, as much as his fans would want to hear more, it's the silence, the unknown that makes this case really what it is. Because when it's unknown, things can kind of fester and go everywhere. Are you surprised we have not at this point now? I mean, I'm damn near like 2 months into this thing and still we don't have any charges against anybody. Are you surprised we haven't heard anything out of the David camp of any type, of any magnitude?
Well, no, I'm not surprised, only because of the condition of her body. By the way, I wanted to say that very early on, again, back to this very early on reporting, NBC reported that, according to the LAPD, and that actually I think it said the sheriff's office, it said the sheriff's office, that this was a homicide. So a lot of people wonder why it was, you know, deemed a homicide initially. And I can tell you that reporting went clear back to NBC and their interview of the sheriff's office. I just wanted to say that. But as of the most recent reporting, LAPD says, listen, we don't have manner of death, which would be accident, suicide, homicide, the like, and we don't have cause of death. They don't have cause of death, Tony, because it's going to take forever for a forensics examiner, an anthropologist, literally an anthropologist, to try to figure out how she died and exactly when she died.
So many questions in this, and not a lot of answers as to where all of this goes from here. Let me ask you this one more question. How often do you see it when you have a property owner like this, big house renting out? I mean, it's a weird, not probably a super common situation, but how, were you surprised that he hired a PI? The owner of the house decided to hire a PI, and I'm wondering why he decided to hire a PI. Was it because of the lack of information that he was getting to begin with?
Well, I have that answer for you. First of all, let me go to question one. Is this usual? And it's very unusual. And I'll tell you why it's unusual. First of all, these homeowners just want this to go away from their end of it. Yeah. And they don't really want a big deal. They don't want all this out in the news. They want to rent that house again. They don't want this to be, you know, out there. Especially blown up now that it's become. Second of all, this PI, and I want to give particularly what he said. He said he first started snooping around, right? He was taking pictures. He was getting with neighbors. He was pulling surveillance tape and so forth. So he contacted the owner of the house. The owner of the house, they got into a discussion about the search warrant return and search warrant inventory. And the search warrant, the landlord never got that, which is typical because you would serve that, you would leave it there at the home, or you would give it to the renter if he was there. That's what we're obligated to do as law enforcement. The PI, I don't think understood that, and he attempted to try to go get a copy for the landlord. He, of course, was shut down by LAPD, and he went back to the landlord. But he did this good deed, if you will, for the landlord. And then I think at that point he said, listen, I'm sure a conversation took place between the landlord and the PI, obviously, because he was hired. And maybe the PI suggested he get a PI. We don't know for sure, but I'm just going on kind of the order and what he said. So, you know, I understand the landlord maybe wanting to get some answers. I just can't imagine the landlord would want this blasted all over national television as it has been.
What do we know about the cameras in the house, though, too? I know there was some speak of that from the PI this weekend.
Yeah, this was really interesting. He says that, quote unquote, this was a sophisticated surveillance system. Now, he said that he could tell when people came into doors and opened windows and things. I wouldn't call that a sophisticated system, but maybe there was more to it. A sophisticated system to me is multiple cameras that are motion operated that I can remotely look on my phone and actually see what each camera is doing and what's happening. I can control the camera and say, okay, listen, I want it to pan clear over here. I don't know how sophisticated this particular system was, but the PI believes that it was utilized by David. He says that because he says that they covered up the smoke sensor piece of the system. And he says they did that. This is according to the PI. He believes they did that because of what was going on in the house. And he also then speculated that they likely covered up the camera portions to hide what was going on in the house. That's his speculative side. But the side he knows about is the smoke. And I have to say, I agree with him. I think if they were astute enough to cover up the smoke detector side, they might have covered up the camera side.
I don't know. I think they were covering it because they were probably smoking weed. And they didn't want the smoke detectors to go off. I think that may be a very simple explanation. And if the smoke detector is connected to the camera, you're inevitably going to cover the camera simultaneously, not because you're trying to cover necessarily that you're smoking weed on camera, because it is legal there. You just don't want the smoke detectors to go off. That's my guess. I don't know.
I agree with you. And you don't know what else they were smoking. I mean,
or whatever it may be, whatever substance it may be. Yeah.
Substances. And, you know, this is back to your point about kind of dumb people doing dumb things that we see all the time in true crime. By all accounts, there were substances involved.
Sure.
By all accounts. So now you even have less of good judgment, like going on with whatever went on. So you add to it youth, you add to it inexperience, you add to it something heinous that happened to that poor girl. Yeah. And then you put on top of it substances.
Sure. There's a lot of things. Yeah. There's so many things in this case where it's like, just because they look like this might not be exactly what they are. And it's hard to, because some things just are what they are, and they're just certain. And some, you know, objects in the rearview mirror may not be as close as they appear. I feel like that there's a lot of that in this case, and not necessarily intentional. I think some of it is just youthful stupidity that is mixed in with all these other elements. So many questions here. Jennifer Coffendaffer, as always, thank you for coming on and giving us your insight into this. I know you're following it very closely. Break the Case is her podcast. You can get it wherever you get podcasts. Just search Break the Case, Jennifer Coffendaffer, on YouTube, or like I said, wherever you get podcasts. That's going to wrap up this episode. Until next time, for Todd and Stacy and Jen, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.